a lot of our friends, our neighbors, the pastor down in Uruguay are very gracious and very patient with me as I ask for the 100th and who knows how many a time, what does that word mean again? Explain this to me again. How do you say this again? And I have a very thick head, but God is powerful, and He's called us to be missionaries there, and He has definitely made it possible so I can understand most of what goes on. When we first got there, I was catching about half what was going on, and for the first year, I had a headache, a literal headache, because I was hearing in Spanish, translating in my head, thinking about what I wanted to reply, translating back into Spanish, and by the time I replied, the conversation is miles down the road, and everybody looks at me like, "You say what?" God has just done amazing work, allowing me to learn the language first of all, be able to communicate. You know, communication is huge, no matter what we're doing. But being able to communicate the gospel to this dying, lost, and dying people. You know, people are lost, dying around us every day. And think about Paul there in Romans chapter 9, 10, 11. He's pleading with his people. He says, if it were possible there in chapter 9, if it were possible that I could change my life for yours, you know, that I feel I fall short of that kind of commitment when I'm dealing with lost people. The fervency and the commitment that Paul had dealing with people. So first of all is communication. Guys, allowed me. Tanya grew up learning the language. Guys allowed me to learn the language. And even learning, we're about an hour away from Brazil. In Brazil, they speak Portuguese. So I'm learning Spanish, but then a lot of the people speak some Portuguese too. And so sometimes we're even closer to the border than the pastor is, national pastor, Pastor Eduardo, whom we're working with. Sometimes I'll be talking to him and he'll say, "Wait a minute, what'd you just say?" And I'll repeat the word and he says, "What's that?" And I'll start explaining it to him. And he said, "Oh, that's Portuguese." And words I pick up I don't even know. I'm learning Spanish or Portuguese sometimes. But learning a language, I guess being totally immersed in the culture and language, you're first forced to learn it, and so I'm just so thankful to the Lord for where He's put us and how He's worked in our lives as far as communicating the gospel. Another challenge we come across there is you would think being in South America, the main religion would be Catholic, but it's not. There's about 37% Catholic. And after that, there's a lot of agnosticism and then animism mixed with Pentecostalism. Of course, the animism came over from Brazil, came over from Africa into Brazil and then filtered down. And then is mixed with, there's two large cults. One is God is Love and the other is the Universal Church that are very strong influences in Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, all the southern cone countries, and it's a very Pentecostal mindset with a lot of emotion, health, wealth, and prosperity. And that's what they preach, but then mixed with it is this animism, you know, witchcraft. And the pastors will bless a feather duster and then sell you a feather duster so you can go chase out the demons that are in your house and in the spiders and the spider webs. You think, how could somebody be so blind to believe something like that? But when you listen to the lies of the devil, you want something easy. You want a fire insurance policy. Oh, let me get, you know, I want that. I don't want to have to worry about serving God. Just fix things for right now. Then you believe or you grab hold of something like that. So that's one of the main challenges we come up against, because these people preach about discipleship, they preach about being saved, they preach the Lord Jesus Christ. So we come up to somebody door-to-door witnessing or out in the ranches, and we start talking to them. They say, "Well, I'm evangelistic. Are you evangelical?" And we say, "Wait a minute, what does that mean?" We have to start back at square one. What does that word mean to you? Because it's totally different than what we would think evangelical. Evangelical means we're evangelistic in our walk, in our talk, and everything, right? And for them, it's health, wealth, and prosperity. Living for the moment, a moment of emotion. And we've come across hundreds of people that have spent large amounts of money trying to be healed from one sickness or other. And we go and start witnessing to them, and they say, no, we don't want to hear about the Bible. We've tried that. We've spent our lives, what we lived on, even some people giving up ranches to be healed. And they said it can't be in religion. And so very hard people, you know, very, but at the same time, all things are possible with God. it can be hard, it can be difficult, people can be very turned off to the gospel. But just to give you an example of God's power, I told you there's a lot of animism, and with that a lot of witchcraft, a lot of sacrifices, offerings to Satan. And Pastor Eduardo, the national pastor whom we're working with, he was contacted about, it's been a couple years ago now, he was contacted by one of the most powerful witches in the city of Melo. And she had been the most powerful witch there a couple years earlier. And she contacted him and she said, I want you to come read the Bible to me. And he says, okay. So he calls her husband. He knew her husband. He calls her husband and talked to him. He said, yeah, she wants you to come read the Bible. Come, I'm home. Come over to our house and read the Bible. And so Pastor and I went over there to her house. And we went in. She was bedridden. Couldn't get out of bed. She had a degenerative disease. And we started talking to her and asked her if anybody had ever presented Christ to her. And she said, well, I don't think the real Christ. So we started asking her about her life, and she said, well, you know most of my life, except a couple years ago I left off my practice because I realized that life couldn't be in witchcraft. Hope couldn't be there. She left it off, and she went into one of these Pentecostal churches. And she said after being there about 6 months, she said, they're doing the same thing I was doing, just under different names, using different names, doing the same thing I was doing. And she left, and she'd been bedridden for a couple of years there at her house. And so we were able to present Christ to her. And she didn't accept Christ at that moment. We don't know for sure if she has as of yet, but she's open. She says, come back. She's invited us, come back to read the Bible and study more. And so I think, wow. If God is powerful, He can do something in the life of this lady that, practically speaking, humanly speaking, we would have said, it's an impossible case, don't even bother going there. But God is powerful, and with Him all things are possible. And so I just thank the Lord for opportunities like that where He has shown Himself strong, and not only to us, but to the community around. You know? And so we are praying for this lady, that she would come to know the Lord. I'd like to turn to a passage in Luke, if you would with me, Luke chapter 14. Now this passage kind of set the background because it's always good to have contextual knowledge of what's going on. Jesus has just come from a feast, one of the prominent Pharisees. And he starts, he tells a couple of stories about what the kingdom of heaven is like. About how it's not about seeking a position of power, seeking a position of prestige, being one of the principal, or the Pharisees, the highest Pharisees, the most religious Pharisees, the most godly Pharisee. It's not about position of importance. But he goes on and points out that he's looking for people who know their need, who recognize their need. Let's read here in verse 25. Chapter 14, verse 25. It says, "And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, If any man come to me and hate not his father, and his mother, and his wife, and his children, and brethren, and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first, and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it, lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation, and is not able to finish it, and all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, This man began to build, and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to war against another king, sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is a great way off, he sendeth an embassage, and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if it has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land, nor yet for the dunghill, but men cast it out. He that hath an ear to hear, let him hear." What does it really mean to count the cost? So many times when we're witnessing to people, and after a number of even Bible studies we've had with people for years, then we've had people just say, "No, I don't want that. I want to try to find satisfaction in my life, in my work, in this that I'm doing. I got to take care of my family. I don't have time for God." So what does it mean to count the cost? And what is Christ teaching here about counting the cost? Really, he says here three times in this passage, "You cannot be my disciple." You know, it's like he's separating the sheep from the goats, because he has this great multitude that's coming out and following after him. And there in verse 25 it says, "And there went out great multitude with him." And so he turns and tells them this. So he has a lot of people who had decided to follow Christ, but they hadn't committed to following him. And he says, "You cannot be my disciple. You don't have the ability to be my disciple." You know, I think about going to the auction barns in San Angelo and seeing how they'd use a goat to lead the sheep through the sale barn arena. And that goat would go around and lead a group of sheep through, and they'd sell it, and they'd take it out the other side, separate the goat, and let the sheep on, put them back in their pen, bring the goat around again, and do it again and again and again. And the goat would lead the sheep, and the sheep would follow. And God uses the illustration of us as sheep in the Bible so many times. And here it's like he's separating the sheep from the goat. The goat that'll, if I don't know if any of you ever had sheep or goats. Anybody in here? Yeah, several of you, okay. So you know you have to have a good fence, or have to have them chained up or something, or they're going to find a hole. We had a couple goats. We bought a couple goats in Uruguay, and all the fences are just a slick wire. It's a 5 or 7 slick wire fence, and it doesn't. They won't hold a goat, and unless you electrify it. Even putting up a net wire fence, the goats are always looking for a hole. They want to find their own way. They want to get out. And I remember when I was 14 years old, my dad had me buy some sheep. And he had me just go out and take care of the sheep for a while, and even stay with them up on the mountain for several days to keep the mountain lions and the coyotes off of them. And I remember one night in particular, I was trying to bring the sheep back down and put them in the pen to keep them from the predators. And I bring them up to a corner, and the gate was wide open, and they just milled around in a circle. They would not see the gate that was wide open, the gate of the pen that was going to be their protection. It was wide open. I was like, "Ah!" And I remember just yelling at them and being so frustrated, "You dumb sheep!" And my dad had a purpose in that because he was trying to teach me some of the biblical principles. Christ calls us sheep. We're so dumb sometimes. Here he's teaching, it's not just about making a decision. Okay, I want heaven. I don't want to suffer the consequences of hell. Those are the only two choices in life, heaven or hell. And oftentimes we want to choose, we say, okay, God, I'll make a deal with you. You know, I'll accept you if you get rid of this danger here, the danger of hell. Right? Okay, I'll accept you if you get rid of this danger. But then I want to live my life. I want to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. Make a decision, but without commitment. It's easy to make a decision, but then not have commitment. And really, we have to ask here. I like to ask a lot of questions, like I said a little bit ago. And so I'm going to ask y'all a couple questions. What is a disciple? He says, you cannot be my disciple. He says that three times here. What is a disciple? What is he talking about here? Anybody? Don't be bashful. I love feedback, so.
One who follows.
One who follows. Good. What else? Has ever? Yes, sir. Very good. Teachable. Have any of you ever discipled someone? Or maybe any of you ever been discipled by someone? Yeah, several of you. Okay. What does that mean? Being a disciple. If you're a disciple, you're a student. The dictionary term is a student of a teacher. Or someone you admire. Someone who's got knowledge. So, and you admire, wow, that person, I want to be like that person. I want to become a student of that person so I can be like him. So Christ saying, you cannot be my student. You cannot be my student. You cannot be my student unless certain things are true of you. And the first thing he comes across here and talks about our love. He says, if any man come after me, deciding, all these people said, I'm coming after you, God. And he had this multitude coming after him because he was performing miracles. He had fed 5,000 people. He had healed thousands of people. And they're saying, wow. Let's go after this guy. Let's follow this guy. And that's much the same we see in Uruguay. Thousands of people. Whoa, let's go into this church. They promised to heal, and they've healed so many people, and not really realizing they may have paid somebody to put on an act to pretend like they've been healed, just for the emotion of the moment. Let's go after these people. Let's decide for Christ, so we can eliminate the danger of hell. And then we're going to go out the door and go across the street to the dance hall. And you think. You know, that seems drastic, but it's very real. And we've seen dance halls over and over again, just in front of churches. Dance halls and bars, and the people go from the church straight across the street without any shame, you think. But that's the kind of decision for Christ that they have. Okay, I'm gonna get rid of this danger here. God, I'll believe in you if you just get rid of this danger, then I'm going to live my life the way I want. You cannot be my disciple. He says, first of all, here, in verse 26, he said, if any man come after me and hate not his father and his mother, his wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. What is he talking about here? That our natural relationships, we should hate those people who God has put in our life. Is that Christ's teaching? From what you know of the Bible, I see a couple people no. Some people are like, this is pretty harsh. Okay, he's using this as a contrast. Our love for him. If we're going to be his disciple, his follower, we're saying, Christ, I choose you, or you have my life. then these other relationships, it's like, in contrast, almost a hate in contrast to our love for Him. Well, we use expressions like this too, don't we? He passed me and He was going so fast, I thought He was going backwards. You know, it's so hot outside, I thought I was going to die. Did you really think you were going to die? You know, I was so thirsty, I thought I was going to die. You know, we use expressions to make a contrast, to make a statement, to set an extreme. I think that's what he's talking about here. Our love for Him. If you're going to come after me, you want to be a disciple of Christ. Our relationships in this world, our natural relationships, have this comparison. And I think, wow, my love, I lack in this area in my love for Christ. So he's not talking about making decisions for Him. He's talking about making disciples and our commitment to Him. He says, whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciples. What is a cross? What is an instrument of death, instrument of torture, instrument of shame? And how many times are we willing to do something if it's easy, but oh, yeah, I don't, you know, that looks like it might hurt. That's going to be painful. Or they're going to make fun of me. They're going to shame me. And one thing we run across all the time, people who say, we've had Bible studies with them, or they've come to church for a while, but then when it comes down to being a disciple of Christ, that's going to cost. And they turn and go out the door. You think, you know, how blessed we are here in America. We have just being brought up with a Christian heritage that we have. How many of you are from Christian homes? Your family or somebody in your house is a believer? Or what? Your parents were believers. And we take that for granted. But just to give you an example, Tanya's working with a young lady named Belen. And she's the only one in her house that is seeking the Lord. She came to children's church, then came to our youth group as she grew older. And then about 2 years ago, she left the youth group. And we'd go try to visit with her, and she wouldn't want to talk much. She went off into the things of the world, drugs, alcohol, everything the world has to offer. I don't want to face the cost of being laughed at by all my friends, my family. And she got to the point in her life where she didn't want to live anymore. And so she tried to commit suicide by overdose. And as she was in the hospital, strapped down to a bed so she wouldn't hurt herself, the thing she had grabbed from her purse before they strapped her down was a piece of paper that she'd written a verse on years before. And she said she held that there and she kept repeating it and thinking, I can't help but think that God's given me a second chance in life. I want to be a disciple, not just make a decision. And Tanya's had multiple times where she's come to the house several times, and Tanya's worked with her and still is working with her. We think how hard it is. All her friends, she's 19 years old, right? 19 years old. All her friends are laughing at her. You spend time at church, you're wasting your time, you're wasting your life. Come have fun with us. Her family, she goes home and she's laughed at. Only haven she has is when she comes to church, or when she comes to our house, or goes to the pastor's house. It costs to be a disciple. And a lot of times, it's easy for us to take things for granted, because we never had to face such a cost growing up, and the blessing we have of growing up in Christian homes, Christian environments. So, my page keeps turning on me here. Then he gives two examples here. And the examples of building and battling. And the Christian life is about building and battling. Now think of Nehemiah. You know, he'd been taken into captivity. He was there for 20 years. He had a plush job in the palace of the most powerful ruler of the world. What did he have to do? He was serving him wine, tasting the wine, and serving him his drinks. Then he heard about the state of his country in Jerusalem, the state of Jerusalem itself. And his heart was grieved. And he goes before this ruler at the risk of his own life. And the ruler grants him permission to go back and rebuild the walls around Jerusalem. So he leaves his life of luxury, where he didn't have to worry about anything. He leaves that and goes to Jerusalem. And when he's there and he starts rallying the people to build the walls, they start building the walls, and what happens? Sanballat and his crew come out. Start laughing at him, start mocking him, start saying he can't do this. And they end up building with a weapon in one hand and a trowel in the other. Out of Nehemiah chapter 6. Life is, our Christian life, to be a disciple, is going to be building and battling. We're going to start building something up, and then there's going to come a battle. Why? Satan is very real, no? Why? Let me ask you another question. Why is there a hell for Satan and his angels? Satan rebelled against God. God prepared it for him and those who follow after him. Satan is walking about in this world as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, seeking whom he can drag down into the pit with him, into destruction. So every time we start to build, here comes Satan to attack. God allows that, right? Think of Job. God allowed it up to a certain point. God was in total control. And when we start to build, and then comes the battle, boy, that's the part we don't like. The danger. What happens in a battle? Wow, we could get wounded, we could get hurt, we could even get killed in a battle. Boy, that scares us. Life is about the Christian life, being a disciple of Christ, is going to be about building and battling. It's not just about decisions. I'll make a decision. I'll make a decision for you, God. I'll make a deal. I'll trust you if you just get this danger out of my life, and then I'm going to go on my way. No. God wants us our all. He wants our commitment to follow Him no matter what the cost. And you know, a lot of times we don't like the battles. I don't like the battles, but I sure like the outcome. After a battle, what happens? If you won the battle, if you got through the battle and you come out victorious, what's the result? Wow, what a great God we serve. He is powerful. He changed my life. He draws us more. He grows our trust in Him through each battle. No? There's been many times since we've been in Uruguay that I've asked God, Lord, with fear and trembling, please grow my faith. And what happens? God's going to send him a battle. He's going to send a battle. And then, you say, well, I just got to persevere through this battle. No, we can't do it in our own strength. Only in God's strength. Only giving our all to him. Not making a bargain with him. Oh, Lord, I'll do this if you do this. No. He wants our all. I'm yours, Lord. Use me. Grow me. Build my faith. And when the battle is done, Christ is glorified. And there's been several times with ladies at church that they've come in they've gone through months or even years of struggles and hard times with family. And they've come back to a prayer meeting. I remember one lady specifically came back to a prayer meeting one night, and her face was just radiating. Why? She'd just been through a battle. She had been really down. She had been in the heat of the battle. But she kept her eyes on the Lord. She was devoted to him. And when she came out of the battle victorious, she said, our God is great. Our God is great. And it wasn't just at church. She was telling this to her neighbors, to her family that are lost. Our God is great. And he has called you and I to be disciples. Not just to make decisions, but to be disciples. Look what he says there in closing there in chapter 15. It says, then drew near unto him all the publicans and the sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. As disciples of Christ, as followers of him, imitators of him, he's called us to mix with the sinners and the publicans, those that don't know him. You know, it's easy to get together at church and fellowship with believers and invite other believers over to our home. And I'm not saying that's wrong at all, in no way. It's easy for us to do that, but Christ also was an example for us. And he had fellowship with the sinners, the down and outers, the people that don't have the hope. And oftentimes, he showed an interest. Well, not oftentimes, he did. He showed an interest in them. He showed an interest in me. He showed an interest in you. And he's called us to be his disciples and to go out. Be interested in the people. They're lost and dying in this world without him. And to show Christ to them.